Well, this really is a different Sunday for us. I want to talk about blueprint for vision. In other words, how do we have vision? What is it that God gives us? And then, you know, what does that look like? And we're going to look at the book of Nehemiah. It's a book, it's actually kind of a journal that Nehemiah had written regarding what God had done in him and through him. It's inspired by the Holy Spirit, so it's scripture. But it's just fascinating watching the things that took place in his life. He was a guy that was so many miles, hundreds of miles away from his home. And God was dealing with him about what was taking place in his home. And he seemed like he was in a place that he couldn't do anything for them at all. And so, but then God, you know, being God, moved in him and did some things to him. So if you would, open up your Bibles to Nehemiah chapter 1. If you're still learning your way around the Bible, there's an Old Testament and a New Testament. The Old Testament starts with Genesis. Nehemiah is in the Old Testament. And so the best way to get there, it's Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, then Joshua, Judges, Ruth, and there's a bunch of first and seconds. First and second Samuel, first and second Kings, first and second Chronicles, and then Ezra, and then Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 1. I want to say hi to everybody that's engaged with us online. Thanks for watching. It's an honor to have you with us, and we have a bunch of people that are out on vacation, man. Jake, you know, Jake's out of town right now, and then Jameson and his family are gone, but you know, I'm grateful for the worship team. Boy, they stepped up. Let's give them a hand and tell them thanks. And so Nehemiah chapter 1, this is going to be several verses here, so hang with me. Nehemiah 1 verse 1 says this: "These are the memoirs of Nehemiah, son of Hechaliah. In late autumn in the months of Kislev, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was at the fortress of Susa." So this is Nehemiah writing in the first person about himself. And it says, "Hanani was one of my brothers, came to visit me with some other men who had just arrived from Judah." So his brother came to visit him and brought some other men with him. They'd just been from in Judah and around the Jerusalem area, seeing, you know, what was taking place there. "And I asked them about the Jews who had returned there from captivity and about how things were going in Jerusalem. They said to me, 'Things are not going well for those who return to the province of Judah. They are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem has been torn down and the gates have been destroyed by fire.' When I heard this, I sat down and wept." So in other words, he's like, how are things going? They said, man, they're not good. The people are returning, but the walls that have been torn down through conquest and through defeat, nobody's had it in their heart to fix this. And so they've just kind of gotten used to things being the way that they are. And nobody has any vision to turn this around and to bring us back to what God has called us to do. So he hears about this and he wept. And we don't know this for sure, but you know, part of it, we know for sure that he wept about the condition or the state that they were in. But I can't help but think that part of it was that at first he felt so incredibly helpless. Like, in other words, man, he was a captive. He was a slave of the king. And it's like, I'm a slave, man. I mean, there's not anything I can do. And probably just wept about that. And so it goes on to say here, so he said, "When I heard this, I sat down and wept. In fact, for days I mourned, fasted, and prayed to the God of heaven. Then I said, 'O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of unfailing love with those who love him and obey his commands, listen to my prayer. Look down and see me praying night and day for your people Israel. I confess that we've sinned against you. Yes, even my own family and I have sinned." In other words, he didn't leave himself out. He's like, man, we haven't been doing what we're supposed to be doing. Not just them, but me. And so, you know, it's just such a recognition of what God's doing in his life. You know, revival and restoration always begins in the heart of an individual before it becomes contagious into the hearts of others. And that's what God was doing in Nehemiah's life right there. So he went on to say, "Yes, even my own family and I have sinned. We've sinned terribly by not obeying the commands, decrees, and regulations that you gave us through your servant Moses. Please remember what you told your servant Moses. If you're unfaithful to me, I'll scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commands and live by them, then even if you are exiled to the ends of the earth, I will bring you back to the place I've chosen for my name to be honored." This is his prayer. He's reminding God of the things that he said. "God, you said this to us. The people you rescued by your great power and strong hand are your servants. Oh Lord, please hear my prayer. Listen to the prayers of those of us who delight in honoring you. Please grant me success today." So in other words, his first prayer was, "Grant me success by making the king favorable to me." In other words, I want the king to notice me. I want him to value and I want favor upon my life between me and him. Because he doesn't have to like me. He doesn't have to give a hoot about me. But he said, I want him to. And so God, grant that upon my life. And then he went on to say, he said, put it into his heart to be kind to me. In those days, I was the king's cupbearer. And so here's the first thing that we know is that the blueprint for a vision, and again, we're talking about the church, but it's not just the church, it's in your life as well, in your personal life, that all of us are part of somebody else's vision, all of us are. But we all have our own vision too, our own dreams that God has given us. And so even though I'm speaking about the church's vision, the church's dreams, and you're a part of that, that doesn't mean that you don't have your own things, the things that God's placed in you, that he wants to do in you and in your family and in your life. And so, first of all, we have to know this, that the blueprint for vision is you want to make sure you're partnered with God. In other words, you know, they say that the two most important days in a person's life are the day that they're born and the day they discover why, the day they find out why. And so many times people are like, I wish I just knew why I was born. I wish I knew what my purpose was, why I'm here, what I was created to do. That would just help me so much. Well, the way you discover that is by walking with the one that made you. The way we discover that, the way I discover it, is by walking with the one who made me, who made us. That's the way that we discover it. We want it to be God-ordained. So many times people will come up with their own plans, and they say, Lord, here's my plans, bless it. When in reality it should be, God, what's your plan? If I get your plan, I'll know what's blessed. And so we want to turn that around and just pray and ask God to give that to us. And so for Nehemiah, he heard this. His heart was moved about what had taken place. Those walls had been torn down. They still had the smoke stains of whenever that whole wall was destroyed by their enemies. And the people were so lost, they'd lost their identity. They'd lost their spiritual connection. The wall was a place that oftentimes they would pray at. But it wasn't there anymore. Nobody's heart was stirred up. It wasn't just an indication of where the city was. It was an indication of where the people were. So Nehemiah's heart was so moved. And so for the longest time, for 4 months, he didn't go share with the king about it. He spent that time praying, talking to God about what God wanted to do and if God could use him. Well, here's the thing I want you to know. When it comes, the reason why you want to make sure that what you're doing is what God wants you to do, first of all, is because a God-ordained vision begins as concern. It begins as concern. In other words, it sees something and it realizes it. Like, unless God does something here, unless God's involved in this, the outcome isn't going to be good. So, first of all, a God-ordained vision begins as concern. At first, you may do nothing, but the vision grows in us. It continues to grow in us. And as it grows, so do we. We mature and we get to a place where all of a sudden we begin to recognize things and see things and God stretches us. I thought this was so wild when you think about it. Nehemiah didn't ask God to build the wall. He prayed for an opportunity for himself to rebuild it. He said, God, you should build that wall. No, he's like, no, God, give me an opportunity to rebuild it. Help me. Give me favor. The things that I can't do, you provide for me. And then also to know this, vision is connected with not just recognizing a challenge or a problem. Of course, vision doesn't say, hey, this is wrong, this needs to be fixed, this is going on. It doesn't just recognize the challenge or the problem. Vision is connected with changing it, meeting that need. I love to tell the story of Cedar Point Church. If you've been here for any period of time, you've heard it, but you're going to hear it again. And for those of you that are pretty new, you'll hear our story. And so, and I say that unapologetically. And so, we started in 2006. I'm originally from here. My wife Tina and I, we got married back in 1987. I was 6 years old. And so, just kidding. But anyway, we got married in 87. And then in 89, we moved to New Mexico. And we were there for 17 years, had all three of our kids there. We did youth ministry there. It was just such a big deal to us. But every time that we would come here, my heart just, it always felt like this was home. And I remember just as kind of I began to lift kind of the grace to do youth ministry was lifting off of me. And I was like, Lord, I don't want to just leave, you know, but I mean, if I got to do anything, if I could go where I want, I would go back to my home. And God was gracious and he allowed me to do that. And so back in 2006, in October of 2006, we connected with a group that I didn't even know was here when we moved here. It was a little church called New Life Church. And yeah, there you go. So thanks for being here. And so actually, they'd been holding down the fort for 9 years. They'd been praying about God to do something. and just were such a significant part. So we met, didn't we know each other existed? My uncle Jim, who was a part of this church, so he went home to be with the Lord last year, connected us. And it was just something that God had in mind, and we were what each other needed. And so I'll be forever grateful to that group, man. They prayed before they ever knew there was a Rick Burke, before they ever knew that there was a thought of having a Cedar Point church, they prayed. And so we joined together. And I remember our first Sunday, I had so many friends that knew us from New Mexico that wanted to come and celebrate with us. And so on our first Sunday, we had 120-some people. I was so excited. It was so good, so thrilling. And I was so impactful in my message that the next week we had 40-some. And so it was just, I was like, hey, God, this is going the wrong direction. What do you know? But it was reality. I was, you know, they all went back to their home and that kind of thing. And we kind of knew this is where we are. And we met in this little place right over here on the other side of this hallway. And it was our place. And then this area out here was where we had a place for the kids. And it was this small group of people that I brought with me and the people from New Life, and God joined us together. And what's cool is that the people that were New Life, you know, the things we said, for this to work, these things have to happen, which meant there were certain things that they had to, you know, just operate in humility, and they did, and stayed with us. And many of them, not just that person that yelled, whoever that was, but many of them are still with us. And I mean, we wouldn't be here without them. And so I'm grateful for them. Let's give them a hand. Let them know how grateful we are for them. Well, over time, we continued to grow, and then as we grew, there was a place in this area called Pizza Time. How many of you remember Pizza Time? Yeah, man, it was Claremore's version of CeCe's, and a lot of times there'd be two people playing instruments when you came in, some guy on a keyboard, another guy on a steel guitar, and probably at one time they were really good musicians, but so they were good. I'm kidding, they were good. So we would come, you know, they had a little like a ballroom dance floor or whatever, and we would set up and do service every Sunday morning. Every Sunday morning we would have service, and it was very hard on our volunteers. They were having to come down here early and set up and that type of thing, but it continued to grow. Well, the space that was next to us, the last thing it had been before we started renting it was a motorcycle shop, and they'd shut it down, and there's not anything in there. And I remember Ron Lilly, who still goes here, you know, he came to me one day and said, Pastor, I think we can turn this place into an auditorium. We don't have to do that anymore. And so we went and checked how much the rent was, how much extra it would cost us to rent. And I'm like, we can do that. We can rent that. And I said, what do you think it'll cost to fix it? And Ron said, I think we can do it for like $30,000 or $35,000. And man, that was like, I'm like, that seems so much. I don't think I could get that for one of my kidneys on the black market. If, you know, he's like, you're not really thinking about doing that. Well, let's just see. And so, I really didn't say that part, but that thought crossed my mind, like, I don't have an organ in my body that's worth that. So so we were looking at that type of thing, and as time went on, it was one of the great bait and switches of all time. It wasn't $30,000, it ended up costing $200,000, and stinking Ron Lilly. But anyway, so I remember we talked to the banker at the bank. You know, we talked to a few banks here in town, and they wouldn't do it unless I could get, like, you know, the president to sign, not to the president of the bank, but president of the country to sign off. But and so we went to another bank, and I met the president of that bank. He was connected to a friend of mine, and he said, "Well, let me come look at it." So he came and looked at it. And he goes, "You don't have any really collateral," and I'm like, "Well, I got a good kidney. I mean, it's all I had." And he goes, "I go, yeah, you're right." He said, but he said, "We're part of our calling as a bank is that we want to help churches." And so he said, I'm going to go out there and we're going to loan you. I think he loaned us $150,000. And it was awesome. And so we didn't have collateral in the church, or I didn't personally have collateral either. I mean, you know, when we came here, we had, you know, Tina and I had, we had no debt, and we had a little money set aside and that type of thing. Within a few years, man, it took everything that we had. We took all of our savings. We had to go into debt and that kind of thing. So we had nothing that we could do that on. And so he was very gracious, and he loaned us the money. And I told him, I realize that we don't have anything. And I said, but I'm grateful you did this. And he said to me, he goes, well, it's part of our vision. He said, the way that you can make sure that I keep doing this is you pay us back. And I'm like, oh. So, you know, we did. We paid it back and paid it off. I said, Lord, I want to pay it off early. And so we did. We paid it off 2 weeks early. But it's early. It's early. So yeah, I don't know what you're laughing at. So, and so a few years later, we, the property manager, every now and then we'd talk about, hey, what do you think about selling this, that kind of thing. And sometimes he'd throw a price at me where I'm like, yeah, we're not. I've been down that road before. That's like way more than we're asking. If it works out anything like the other deal, then it's going to be really expensive. And so one day he came, I asked him, and he said, make me an offer. And so I made him this really ridiculously offer because I didn't have the authority to make that offer. But it didn't stop me by throwing a number out there at him. It would have been embarrassing had he taken it, and I would have said, well, I really got to go back and ask the people that are making this decision before I say anything. But he said, oh, let me think about it. And he came back, and he countered, and it was just barely more than what I'd thrown out there at him. And so we went and talked to, we have for big decisions like that, we have a what's called a corporate board or whatever. And so that help oversee like big things that we do. And so, and they said, yeah, I think it's time, it's right to do that and that kind of stuff. So we did it. And so we ended up buying the whole center. It's all of the center. And as time went on, we were growing. COVID hit. I shared part of that story with you. And then we began to remodel this area. And so we remodeled this. And as COVID came to a close, continued to grow. And it was just one of those things that when you look at all of these seasons of life that we've been in as a church, the one thing that's been consistent for us is that we love ministering to kids. We've always taken part of what we have and ministered to teenagers, ministered to elementary age kids, ministered to kindergartners and pre-Kers and toddlers and babies. It's just been a part of our vision when we had 40. And then last week when we were just a few short of 1,600, we've always ministered to kids. And so it's who we are. And you know, and Jesus said this. He said, I can tell you where your heart is. Your heart's wherever your treasure is. In other words, wherever you put your money is what matters to you. And that's true for any of us. It's true for any of us. It's true not just for us as individuals, but it's also true for a church. I'd have friends that go, hey, I've got this job to go minister. And they say they really love teenagers, so we'll ask them how much of their budget goes towards that. That'll give you a great indication of how much that matters to them. And so we, you know, a huge part of our staff is connected to ministering to kids. And I'm talking about whether they're in the teen level all the way down. And so it's part of what we do. Now, for years, I felt confident in saying that this matters to us. And until once we built this, then there was an element of it that felt like it was inconsistent with who we are because we had this great place for adults that's just meets, you know, so many things, you know, and needs and that type of thing. But our kids before looked okay, but it just didn't look to the same level that this, and it's crowded. I went over there in the kids area a few minutes ago, and this is a good problem to have, but there's a lot of kids in there. There's a lot of kids there. And let me tell you something too. There's a lot of adults in there volunteering and ministering and being story changers in our kids area. And so that's good. And Stacy, man, her and her team, they're killing it over here. They're doing a great job over here. So it's just all of those things are happening, but we just realize that there's this need to reach kids. And so we see something in our right now with the kids that are showing up that we want to, you know, that what we have now, the kids we have now need room. They need space so we can minister them more effectively. Also, with what we're trying to do, that it will make it, security better. It's safer in the things that we want to do. We'll have more things available. And then also, the truth of the matter is that, and we have some people on vacation day and that kind of thing, but this service is like real close to being full. You know, and our 902 service is really going. We had over 500 in last week's 902 service, and we had over 500 again there. Last week in this service, we're about, this counting everybody, had like 770 people. So it's just growing. And so we're going to add 180 seats in here. And so all of those things are because as we looked at this, we recognize that we have a challenge. That we're like, there's just so many things that would be so much easier about not doing something. Let's be real transparent with you that we have guests here this morning. And like in a few minutes, I'm going to talk about finances. And if you've been around here, you know that that's not a comfort level for me because the church has a reputation when it comes to money. That people want to say, well, all the church wants is your money. And I don't believe that's a fair picture or fair statement. I'm not saying that there aren't a few people that take advantage of that.
But most churches, the pastor doesn't even, he's not even able to work full time at the church. That, you know, that they're either living at poverty level or they're having another job to so they can take care of their family while they do this. And so I have a great deal of love for the local church, and I won't fight you over politics, even though some people say really stupid things. But I will fight you over the local church just because I know of the people that go there and the people that lead there. And no, they're not perfect. They make sacrifices, they love Jesus, and they love people. And so I'll fight for that. And so I see that. But again, some people, they have this feeling, you know, and so they use that, well, the church wants my money because Joel Osteen. Well, first of all, you don't know Joel Osteen. I don't know Joel Osteen. None of us know Joel Osteen. So let's keep his name out of our mouths, okay? So, I mean, the Will Smith thing. But anyway, so, you know, let's edit that. Anyway, so, and I'm not going to slap anybody, but but the truth of the matter is that nobody knows, you know, we don't know him. And again, and you may not like him. And again, I don't know him, but I'm not you. I don't probably feel the same way about him that you do. But he's not most of us. And so some people use that as a reason to get offended and that kind of stuff, when that is not most people's. There's nobody here that's that. There's nobody in this community that's that. Nobody. There's 50-some churches. There's not a single person like that that you can look and say, yes, look at how they're living, and it tells you what they do with the finances. There's not anybody in this community that does that, that's leading a church. And so, having said that, though, I still am aware that there may be somebody in here that you haven't come to church for years because you were concerned that this is what you were going to hear. And I can tell you all day long, this is normally not us. This is like maybe the third time in 16 years that I've had a conversation like this. And you won the luck of the draw. It was your lucky day to show up in church and hear this for the first time. And so, please come back. But I'm unapologetic to the people that this is their church. This is part of our vision. It's part of who we are. And so a vision is connected with not just recognizing a challenge or a problem, but with changing it. And so we want to do that. We want to recognize it, and we want to change it as well. So Nehemiah saw that, and he recognized it, but then he didn't want to just weep and feel bad. He prayed to God, God, help me. Help me to do this. Help me to see this. And so he did that. Let's move on to the next chapter. So number one is this, is that make sure you're partnered with God. Look at number two. Nehemiah 2, verse 11 says this, so I arrived in Jerusalem 3 days later. I slipped out during the night, taking only a few others with me. So the king said to Nehemiah, you can go. How long will you be gone? And he sent a letter with him, which gave him permission to do those things. And so as he went, he did all of those things, and he was looking, but he wanted to take a look at things before he talked to the people. They didn't even know why he was there. So it says, we took no pack animals with us except the donkey I was riding. After dark, I went out through the valley gate, past the jackal's wall, and over to the dung gate to inspect the broken walls and burned gates. Then I went to the fountain gate and to the king's pool, but my donkey couldn't get through the rubble. So though it was still dark, I went up the Kidron Valley instead, inspecting the wall before I turned back and entered again at the valley gate. The city officials did not know I'd been out there or what I was doing, for I had not yet said anything to anyone about my plans. I had not yet spoken to the Jewish leaders, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or anyone else in the administration. But now I said to them, you know very well what trouble we're in. So in other words, he got around to the people that were connected, that had the same heart that he had. And he said, look, man, you know the trouble we're in. Look at everything around you. You can see it all. And so he went on to say, Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been destroyed by fire. Let us, everybody say, let us. In other words, he didn't say, let God or let me, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and end this disgrace. He said, let us do this. So the blueprint of a vision is, first of all, you got to make sure that it's God's thing, that it's his plan, that he wants to be a part of it. It requires all of us to trust him and to stretch. But then afterwards, once you determine that it's God's plan, then you have to begin to share that vision with people. And so that's one of the things that's been happening. It's what's happening today about who we are, about having a desire to reach kids and to do those things. So I'm sharing that with you again. Then he goes on after that to say that, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem in this disgrace. There's a Chinese proverb that says this, if your vision is for a year, plant wheat. If your vision is for 10 years, plant trees. If your vision is for a lifetime, plant people. And so we have a desire, man, to impact the lives of kids. To impact the lives of kids. I love this community. One of the reasons I want to come back to northeastern Oklahoma, Green Country, to this area, is because I get the culture. I was raised here. I know, you know, I just get it. I mean, people say, well, you know, they need churches over here. And I'm like, I don't get those people. I get these people. You know? And I mean, I love them, whoever it is that we're talking about. But I remember praying whenever the grace of youth ministry was lifting off of me. And again, I asked the Lord, if I got to do whatever I want, I'll go wherever you want me to. But if I got to pick, I would go back to northeastern Oklahoma. I get it there. I'm from there. It's my home. I want to give the rest of my life there. I want to finish my race. I'm not looking for a bigger city, a bigger anything. This is where I'm called. This is where I'll be. You know, again, we all belong to the Lord, but I believe that I'll finish the rest of my race in this area, and we'll continue to do what God's called us to do. And so I'm grateful for the life that God's given us together. I think about, you know, we only have not very many. We've got all the shoes that we need. We've got all the shoes we need now. What I mean by that, I told you a few weeks ago that we're going to have to get more. You guys have stepped up. We've got all the shoes we need. And now we're just trying to connect the rest of them with their owners. And so, we gave 1,200 pairs somewhere in that area of shoes away, you know. And to me, that was so impactful. I'll tell you the thing, it was even more cool than that. The first time we did this, a church in Sand Springs called and said, can we do that? And I'm like, yeah, man, just give us credit for it. No, I didn't say that, but I said, yeah, you can do it, man. The more the merrier and that kind of thing. Well, then somebody just recently sent me something, a picture of a church in Veneta that gave away like 140 or 150 pairs of shoes and that kind of thing. And so it's contagious, right? It's contagious. It elevates. You know, what God's called us to do, and I believe that the thing that he's given us to do will not only impact us as a church, but I think it'll challenge some other churches to say, we're going to invest in kids too. The problem with the body of Christ, with a lot of local churches in our country, is that they're one generation from having their door shut. I don't want our best days to be when I'm pastor. I want our best days to be ahead of us. We're building for a world that we'll get to see while we're here, but also it's going to impact lives for a world that I'm not in anymore someday. And so it's bigger than me. It's bigger than this moment. It's what God's given us. That my kids are all grown, but I got grandkids. I've got 9 grandkids. Yeah. Yeah, you're yelling. Next time they show up, I'm calling you up and having you come over. Man, my legs just got tired saying 9 grandkids. Oh, my gosh. But, man, I mean, in all of them, but 2 live here and go to church here. Not in the church. I mean, they live in this area. 2 of them live in Amarillo. And when they're in town, this is where they come. And so I think about them. I want their lives to be impacted. It's very, very personal to me. And so when we see this, the second thing, first thing is that you have to make sure that you're partnered with God. The second thing is that you have to tell others the vision. You have to let them know. I'm doing that right now. The third thing is in 17 again, it said this. But now I said to them, you know very well what trouble we're in. Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire. Let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and end this disgrace. Then I told them about how the gracious hand of God had been on me and about my conversation with the king. They replied at once, yes, let's rebuild the wall. So he shared with them, they're like, we're doing this with you. He went on to say, so they began the good work, but when Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, the Arab, heard of our plan, they scoffed contemptuously. What are you doing? Are you rebelling against the king? They asked. I replied, the God of heaven will help us succeed. I realize that not everybody goes with you on these kind of moments. Sometimes people don't like it and that type of thing. And as you know, against my personality, man, this is very hard, but I want you to know this, the God of heaven will help us succeed. He'll help us succeed. He goes on to say, we, his servants, will start rebuilding this wall, but you have, he told them, he said, you'll have no share, legal right, or historic claim in Jerusalem. But here was the third thing. After he told them the vision, he asked others to commit, with you. And so that's what today is about, is that in a few minutes, we're going to give you an opportunity to commit, you know, with us in some form or fashion. And it's not the same for all of us. And I will tell you, I'm not indifferent. I struggle with certain things. I struggle with this. I struggle because in some ways I'm getting ready. The biggest thing I struggle with is in just a moment I'm going to ask you to pray about financially committing in some way. And again, I realized for some of you, this was just what you thought would happen. And if this is your first time at a church, if you're not a Christian, I want to say this, that I don't want you to feel any pressure to give whatsoever. This is not about you. You keep coming. There's no expectation of you. But I am putting an expectation on the people that, hey, this is my church and I'm committed to the vision. You know, when we sit with the banker a few weeks ago, he told us, he said, the average giving in a church is, if you know what a church gives, the low-end average, like you find out how many people go there, and you figure that at $25 a person. See, that's the low-end average. And we were at, 2 weeks ago, we were at $12 a person. So we were like considerably lower than the average. And I don't say that to make anybody feel bad or anything like that, other than me, because it's a real reflection on my leadership. I've not done a good job of leading in this area. And because I care about it. I know inflation is through the roof, and it's hard for people out there and that type of thing. And so I'm not unaware of that or indifferent to it. And there were even times when I thought about it, I thought, Lord, let's just wait. But I just, again, the word he gave us to be here is, you know, it's just persevere. And so I felt like we're supposed to push through and do this and just trust God, do what we can. We don't have to do all of it. We can just, each one of us can do something, some of it. And so I saw this where Jesus told his disciples they were the salt of the earth. And when you look at their life at that time, they weren't being salt. They were being salty, but they weren't being salt. And then he didn't say that because of how they were performing. In light of their performance, that didn't seem likely. In light of what they were doing, it didn't seem likely that they were the salt of the earth. But he didn't share with them based upon their performance up to that time. He shared that with them based upon their potential. And I know who we are as a congregation. I know the things that God has led us to do. It's not just impacted us, not just impacted kids in our community. We had some family from Pittsburgh, Kansas, come down at Lace Up because their kids needed shoes. And so people are like, well, I think we just miss people there. And I get that. I've wrestled with that too. But what family are we going to turn away? You know? And so, but then also for other churches to embrace things like that. And then we'll have Gift of Christmas where people that have to spend Christmas alone will deal with that. My dad lost both of his parents when he was 15. And so when I think about his story, that resonates with me. Not everybody has somebody to do Christmas with. And so we have events and moments like that to help people and be good to them. And so, you know, this helps us reach kids. Helps us reach kids in some ways. I mean, we're really growing. You know, we've become what people would call a large church now and that kind of thing. But just from other aspects like financially and stuff like that, we seem like the least likely place to take on such a thing. But for whatever reason, God trusts us with it. So we're going to do it. And just like Nehemiah was sharing, you know, I'm sharing with you, and I'm going to give us a chance here in a moment to do something. I woke up earlier than I normally do this morning. I could not go back to sleep because I was like, I don't want to chase people off today. But yet, on the other hand, I realize that if we don't do this, this will, first of all, we'll not be doing what God wants us to do, but we'll also be missing what he's given us an opportunity to do. As I said before, man, I haven't necessarily led well in this area for the history of the church. But I believe in what is taking place here so much that I'm willing to be uncomfortable and risk being misunderstood, being criticized, and even making you guys uncomfortable. And the reason why is because ultimately I know this isn't about money, this is about people. It's about kids, reaching them. I want you to think about your childhood. If you had a great childhood, then this moment is a moment to do it as an act of gratitude to God and for the people that are a part of your story. If your childhood was hard, think about how your childhood would have been different if you would have had people invest in you back then and told you about Jesus. Then do it for the 10-year-old you. Because you would know. You could say, when people say, well, kids don't really have problems, you could say, my 10-year-old self had huge problems. But as I said, Jesus didn't speak to their performance. He spoke to their potential.